Marshall Goldsmith has some advice for you as you make your way through life.
Sometimes in life, you got to eat the marshmallow.
Something we should all remember, to eat the marshmallows. What exactly does he mean by this? And what other secrets does he have for us to live an earned life? It's all on this episode of Timeless Leadership. This is Timeless Leadership, where we explore the values and principles that drive extraordinary leaders. We look for the timeless virtues that are just as relevant in the 21st century as they were in the first century. Universal truths that will help make us better versions of ourselves. Hello and welcome to Timeless Leadership. I'm Scott Monty. I'm so glad you're here. If you aren't already subscribed to the Timeless and Timely newsletter and the podcast, please do yourself a favor, do me a favor, and hit that subscribe button now. And if you wouldn't mind telling other people about the show, either by leaving us a rating or review in Apple Podcasts, or simply by the power of your unique voice, I'd really appreciate that. It all stands in service to making you a better version of yourself. I'm excited to share today's interview with you because Marshall Goldsmith has long been a hero of mine. He's an executive coach, as you're going to learn, and he actually coached a leader I worked with, Alan Mulally. And when I consider the impressive leader that Alan became, I have to imagine that Marshall Goldsmith had something to do with it. And he'll talk about that a little bit in our interview. But as you're looking to improve your leadership style, maybe just improve who you are as a person, I found that what Marshall shares in The Earned Life, his latest book, is really a guide, a recipe book of sorts for how you can take the time to focus on the things that matter most to you, and quite frankly, that line up with your purpose and meaning in life. Things that perhaps we don't take the time to reflect on often enough. So go on this journey with me, with Marshall, as we explore the earned life. Dr. Marshall Goldsmith is a pioneer in 360-degree feedback as a leadership development tool. His early efforts in providing feedback and then following up with executives to measure changes in behavior were precursors to what eventually evolved into the field of executive coaching. With nearly 40 years of hands-on experience, Marshall is the leading expert on leadership and coaching for behavioral change. He's been recognized as one of the top 10 business thinkers in the world and the top-rated executive coach at the Thinkers 50 ceremony in London since 2011. Published in 2015, his book Triggers is a Wall Street Journal and New York Times number one bestseller. He's also the author of What Got You Here Won't Get You There, a New York Times bestseller, number one Wall Street Journal business book, and winner of the Harold Longman Award as Best Business Book of the Year. And his latest book, The Earned Life, offers a potent but simple approach that accommodates both our persistent need for achievement and the inescapable stuff happens unfairness of life. Marshall Goldsmith, welcome to Timeless Leadership.
Thank you so much for inviting me. I'm very happy to be here.
Excellent. Well, I'm curious. I mean, we could go so many directions, but I'm curious, what prompted you to get into the coaching business in the first place?
Well, it's an interesting story. It's really two parts. The first part is, how did I get into leadership development? I had a PhD from UCLA, and I was studying to be a college professor, and I met a very famous man named Dr. Paul Hersey. He invented situational leadership with Ken Blanchard. And, you know, one day he let me follow him around and I literally served the coffee and moved the tables. And one day he got double booked and he said, "Can you do what I do?" Well, I'd been practicing this. And I said, "Well, I don't know." He said, "I need help. Can you do it?" I said, "I don't know." He said, "I'll pay you $1,000 for one day." That was about 46 years ago. I was making $15,000 for 1 year. I was brought up in a small town in Kentucky. We had an outhouse the first 4 years I was in school. So $1,000 for a day, and you know what I said? Sign me up, coach. I go do a program for the Metropolitan Life Insurance Company. They are incredibly angry when I show up because I wasn't him. But I get ranked first place of all the speakers. So he called them up, and they said, "We love this guy. Send him again." Paul said, "Do you want to do this again?" I said, "Sign me up, Paul." Well, that's how I got into leadership development. And again, it's great to have mentors. And then also how I got into coaching is I really was the pioneer in something called 360-degree feedback, especially custom 360 feedback. And I was talking to a CEO of a big company, and he said, "You know, look, we got this kid working for us, young, smart, dedicated, hardworking, driven to achieve, arrogant, stubborn, know-it-all jerk." He said it would be worth a fortune to me if I could help this kid change his behavior. Well, I said, "You know, I like fortunes. Maybe I could help him." He said, "I doubt it." I said, "I have a deal for you. I'll work with the kid for a year. If he gets better, pay me. If he don't get better, it's all free." You know what he said? Sold.
Wow.
There was nothing called coaching. I just made that up.
Yeah, that's amazing. Well, I mean, that's how some of the best ideas come about, isn't it?
And, you know, it worked out. I got paid. He was very happy. And that's how I got into the coaching business.
That's wonderful. Really. So I'm curious, that individual, that arrogant jerk that you took on commission, basically, what did you do to change his behavior, his outlook, or whatever needed to be changed?
Well, it's never about what I did. It's what he did. I gave him confidential feedback, and he saw what everyone really thought of him, which was not a pretty picture. Mm. And I said, "Look, this is up to you. If you get better, it's not about me. It's about you. You're going to have to work hard. But if you work hard, you do what I tell you, you'll get better." And he did. And, you know, God bless him. He, like many very successful people, all he got in his life was positive feedback. Huh. And any human or animal will replicate behavior that's followed by positive reinforcement. Well, that's pretty much all he got, and he'd been like a golden boy. And he got confronted with reality. He had a choice, and he made a good choice.
So it seems to me like when you take on a client like that, when a leader is interested in coaching, they want to learn. They're curious. They're probably driven by the need to constantly improve. Have you come across leaders who maybe don't have an interest in coaching, don't want to be self-critical, lack that self-awareness? And how do you respond to that?
Well, let me give you background. One of our mutual friends is Alan Mulally, probably the greatest corporate leader in the world in the last 30 or 40 years. And I had the honor of coaching him at Boeing. And again, I did this pay for results thing. He was fantastic to start with, and he improved more than anyone, and he had the least room for improvement. And he ended up 200 people got better. So I talked to Alan. I said, "Alan, look, of all the people I've coached so far, I spent the least amount of time coaching you. You improved the most, and you were great to start with." And I said, I made a chart here. One dimension is called time spent with Marshall Goldsmith, and the second dimension is called improvement. And there seemed to be a negative relationship between spending time with me and improving. I said, "Alan, the way this chart looks, if you never met me, you'd been even better." Alan taught me a lesson I never forgot. He said, "Marshall, your biggest challenge as a coach is called customer selection. You work with great people, dedicated people, hardworking people. You win. You work with the wrong people, you lose."
Yeah.
He said, "Don't make coaching about yourself and your ego and how smart you think you are. Make it about them." So the answer to your question, how do I deal with people who don't care? The answer is, I don't deal with people who don't care.
Perfect.
You know what I tell them? You don't want to change, it's okay.
Yeah.
Somebody says, "Prove to me this is a good idea." You know what I tell them? Probably not a good idea. In your case, a terrible idea. They think, "I'm not sure it's going to work." Probably won't.
So this intrigues me because in the realm of leadership and development and human behavior, you know, we're talking about a lot of soft skills. And you know, Tom Peters has talked to our audience here about this. You know, soft is hard. It is not that easy to deal with the softer side. But how do you, Marshall, when you're working with leaders, how do you measure their improvement?
Oh, that's quite simple. And my working with Alan is written up on a case study. It's called Expanding the Value of Coaching. And the way I do it is pretty simple. For example, Alan, he didn't have to improve something as much as he got feedback that his CEO at the time wanted him to do better about reaching out across the organization, influencing people laterally. So he said, I'm going to do a great job of that. Well, we got feedback from his partners, from his direct reports on what he wanted to change. Did he change it? We did something called a mini survey a year later. And the results were amazing.
No, perfect. You make it sound so easy.
Two words, simple and easy. What I teach is very simple. It's far from easy.
Mm-hmm. I like how you've actually brought that concept into the earned life. And the subtitle of the book is Lose Regret, Choose Fulfillment. And I think what I've seen from a lot of people over the course of the last half decade or so is particularly them dwelling on things that they wish they had done differently in the past. And they regret things. And it could be small things or it could be significant things that change the direction of their lives. So talk to us a little bit about how you approach the concept of regret and how people might try to avoid it.
Well, you know, I think it's very important first to look at what matters in life. What really matters in life? And there aren't a thousand things that matter. If you look at what matters, first, I'll take the stuff I don't talk about in the book. Well, you need to be healthy. The book is not a book on how to be healthy, physically healthy, but that's important. You need to have great relationships with people you love. That's very, very important. And Dr. Bob Waldinger did a great thing. You should interview him if you get a chance. He's an amazing guy. He did the Harvard Longevity Study and found relationships critically important for having a good life. And then, you know, you need at least kind of a lower middle-class level of money. You don't need to make a fortune to be happy. There's not much correlation, by the way, between money and happiness beyond a middle level. Then what does matter, assuming you've got a middle level of income, assuming that you got good relationship with people you love, and, you know, assuming you're healthy, three things matter. One, and I talk about all three in the book, we need a higher aspiration. What is the answer to that great question, why? What is the purpose of doing this? I mean, people are out there working incredibly hard. Why are they working so hard? What is the purpose? The second thing we need is we need achievements that are aligned with our aspirations. We need ambitions which are connected to these achievements. And those are aligned with that sense of aspiration. So we're working hard, we're doing something important, and we're doing a good job of it. There's a reason why. And then finally, it's our day-to-day actions. We need to enjoy the process of life itself, be involved in the process of life itself, and not like we're practicing for something that's going to happen later. So to the degree our actions, our day-to-day behaviors, and our ambitions, which are our achievements, and our aspirations, our higher purpose are aligned, we're probably going to have a great life.
I like that. I like that a lot. And it seems to me like, at least from what I've seen, a number of people who are not focused on those actions, focused on the present, they're stressing out about two things. They're beating themselves up over something that has or hasn't happened in the past, and they're anxious about what might happen in the future.
Right.
What's the salve to that? How do you actually solve for missing out on living in the present?
Well, the first thing is this. In the book, I focus a lot on every time I take a breath, it's a new me. So in life, we are constantly restarting. And so whatever happened in the past happened. We need to have a vision for the future, yet we can't sit there and think about the future all the time. Let me give you a simple story, the parable of the golfer and the beer can. The golfer is teeing up on the 18th tee there and has a chance to win a little club championship, is all excited, but people in front of him are a foursome of noisy people drinking beer. He's really annoyed, but he tries not to let him bother him. He hits a perfect drive right down the middle of the fairway. Something happens. The ball jumps into the rough. Terrible lie. He walks to the ball. What happened? He sees a beer can. The idiots have left a beer can. He hit the beer can. He walks to the ball. What's a golfer need to do? This goes back to your point. First, the past. Forget about the beer can. Forget about the idiots. Forget about the drive. Let it go. The second thing is, don't focus on winning the club championship. That's only a distraction. hit the shot in front of you. The great golfer, you hit the shot in front of you. You don't focus on the past. You don't focus on the future. It's hard enough to do that. You hit that shot. You have a strategy. You hit the shot. Well, that's kind of the way I talk about the book. You've got to let go of the past. People are doing a great job at doing anything or doing what they're doing. We mentioned our friend Alan. Why is he so great? Well, he wasn't pretending to be the CEO of Ford or acting like a CEO. He was the CEO of Ford. He wasn't pretending to be a leader. He is a leader. He was being him. He's very real in that professional role. Well, great people at anything are doing what they're doing. They're engaged in the process of what they're doing. They're not trying to be somebody else. They're being who they are in that moment, in that job, in that role.
Yeah. And one of the things that Alan famously brought to us at Ford, and you know, I was in many of these meetings, so I could attest to it, was the BPR, the business plan review, which, you know, it brought kind of an engineer's sensibility to it, but it's not just a process. There's emotion that goes into it. There's an emotional investment. There's a commitment to it. It's a culture, not just a process. And what you've done in the book, which I love, is you've taken Alan's BPR concept and applied it to life. And you've got an LPR. What's that all about?
Well, the LPR is something we really started over the COVID period. And the people who are in it are not a secret. Their names are in the book. We wanted to get 60 incredibly diverse, great leaders from around the world. And every week, they would review their lives. So the BPR, you talk about the business side. Well, we talk about life, which could be work, family, health, whatever. And then every week, people would talk about how they did. They talk about their challenges. They talk about their strength. They answer daily questions. They talk about their scores. And then we practice something called feed forward, where they would ask for advice. And then they sit there, listen, shut up, say thank you, and repeat the process. Well, people loved it because, one, they're being helped, but two, they're not being judged. And they loved having this support group of people who were there to help them. There's another saying, it's lonely at the top. It used to be lonely at the top. Today, it is lonelier at the top. Social media, pressures, people afraid to say the wrong things. It's hard. It's lonely. And they love being in an environment where, as one person said, for 2 hours a week, I get to act like a human being.
And I think that's key. It's really about this sense of contributing and being present for it. And the one thing, and I've struggled with this myself, Marshall, one thing that you identify is the difficulty people have in asking for help. And it's seen as a weakness in some cases. How can we get over that?
Well, again, I don't want to overuse Alan, but he's a great role model. He had a saying, when he's asked for a suggestion, he would say, is there anyone else in the Ford Motor Company can answer this question better than I can? If there is, maybe I shouldn't be talking right now. Well, that's to me not a mark of weakness. It's a mark of wisdom. He's a smart guy. If he's the CEO who said, this is my suggestion, people would do it. No matter how idiotic, they would do it anyway. Why he's the CEO? Well, I teach all my clients to get in the habit of asking for help, asking people, how can I be a better? And by the way, not just at work, at home. How can I be a better friend, a better family member? How can I be a better husband, a better wife, better partner? How can I be a better parent? In one of my classes, a woman told a story about, she asked her mother, how can I be a better daughter? And her mother said, Dad's dead, and I live alone in the country, and every day I take a long walk up the mailbox, and there's nothing in the mailbox that makes me lonely. She said, she started sending her mother little pictures and cards every day. Well, what did that mean to her mother? Everything. What did it cost her? Nothing. And she said the last thing her mother said before she died was, thank you for doing that. Well, it's a great example of just asking, you know, how can I be better? And it was a great thing for her mother. If your parents are alive, it's a great thing to do for them. Number two, it's great for her. Number one regret kids have when mom and dad dies, why did I thank her for all they did to help me? Why was I judging them? And number three, she had little kids. A great message for her children of how to treat her. So I think it's great to get in this habit of asking, how can I be a better, not just at work, though, at home and all the people that you love.
I get a sense that you went through that process yourself. You just left a home of more than 3 decades on the West Coast, and you've relocated to Nashville.
Yes, I just relocated to Nashville, and I love it here. It's really a lot of fun. My daughter Kelly is a professor at Vanderbilt, chairman of the marketing department, and I've got a couple of grandkids and a son-in-law here, so it's very nice.
Oh, they must be so thrilled to have you nearby.
Yeah, it's very nice.
That's wonderful. So, we've got the process down, the life plan review. What does that take? Not only being vulnerable, asking for help, but when you're doing a review like that, when you're taking that kind of Buddhist approach that every breath is a new you, what does it take to really take stock of and be self-aware and do that kind of daily improvement?
Let me give you what I'd consider to be one of the greatest realizations that I had in that process. My friend Mark Thompson, who did it with me, had, and a lot of participants, and that's this. I mentioned these three variables are aspirations, our ambitions, and our day-to-day actions. If you look at the history of the world, some people have been stuck in the aspiration level. They're very thoughtful. They come up with deep and profound ideas, but they don't do much to implement on these. And if not, maybe they don't really love people very much, but they're good at living in their heads. Well, that's overweighting on that aspiration phase. So the most of humans are the opposite end of the scale. They overweight on the action phase. They live day-to-day lives. They play video games. They eat. Our ancestors were poor people. They didn't have time to focus on these higher order things. They just basically stayed alive, and that's most people today. The people listening to this podcast, listening to us, people I coach, have neither one of those problems. Everyone listening to me right now, my guess is that their biggest challenge is they're lost in achievement, addicted to achievement. And we come up with this totally misguided belief that if I achieve, I will be happy. That's the great Western disease. I will be happy when I get the money, status, BMW, condominium. I will be happy when the great Western disease. One of the guys in our group is Safi Bacall. And Safi said, I finally realized, he's a scientist, he's a brilliant man, he wrote a book called Loon Chops. He said, I finally realized happiness and achievement are independent variables. Be happy to be happy and achieve to achieve, but don't think they're the same thing. I said, you know, Safi, I'm so glad you realize this. You already have a PhD in physics from Stanford. You've written a New York Times bestselling book. You've made millions of dollars. You've started 4 businesses and consulted to presidents. If that is not enough achievement to make you happy, you really think a little more is going to get it over the line? He said, you're right. It's not. It's not going to make any difference. Well, very important for the people I work with who are mega achievers, not to become addicted to achievement. In the Bhagavad Gita, the great history book of philosophy, of Hindu philosophy, a key point it makes is, never become fixated on outcomes or results for 2 reasons. One, you don't control the outcomes in many cases. Many variables are involved. But 2, what happens after you achieve the results? How much long-term satisfaction and happiness that bring? A week, a day, a month? Not much. I mean, extreme example, Michael Phelps, 25 gold medals. What do you think about doing after winning number 25, killing himself? Well, you can't achieve your way into happiness. Or, a good client of mine, a great example, Albert Bourla, the CEO of Pfizer. I mean, pretty impressive guy, wrote one of the endorsements in my book there. And, Albert, I called him up a few years ago. How's it going? Hey, pretty good. Came up with that cure for COVID. That was very impressive. I said, Albert, saved my life probably. Thank you so much. And stocks an all-time high and employee engagement. He went on and on. I said, Albert, what's your problem? He said, next year. I said, if his worth as a human being is he has to achieve more than he did that year, he'll never be happy. He'll never do that much again. You don't want him to be that much again. You don't want another pandemic, right? Well, we need to learn to do 3 things. One, it's fine to achieve, but enjoy the process of life itself and never think achievement is going to lead to this place. There's a great a certain type of book has the same ending, and they lived happily ever after. Unfortunately, that's called a fairy tale. That's not the real world. In the real world, as I talk about, you start over every day. There's no happily ever after. There's no place you're going to get to and be happy for eternity. That's not the way the world works. Every day we start over. Every day it's a new me. And so I think really important to focus on all three of these things. What's my purpose? Am I achieving something related to that? And am I enjoying the process of life itself? Am I happy while I'm doing this?
Yeah, that is so critical. And, you know, as you say, these temporary achievements are just that. They're temporary. There's a sense of impermanence to our lives that I don't think we reflect on enough.
You know, I completely agree with you. And one of the parts of the book I like the best is a chapter about the marshmallow research. There's this fascinating research study involving marshmallows at Stanford University. You take a kid, you give the kid one marshmallow. Say, kid, if you eat one, you get one. But if you wait, two marshmallows for you. Well, allegedly, they did this longitudinal research, and the kids that eat one become losers. The kids that eat two all become successful. And the message is delayed gratification is good. Almost every self-help book, what does it say? Delayed gratification is good. Work out more. Go on the diet. Delayed gratification, good. There's only one minor problem with the research. They didn't take the kid that had two marshmallows and say, you know, kid, wait a little bit. Three. Let's wait some more. Four. Five. Keep waiting. 10, 100, 1,000. And where does the story end? An old man sitting in a room waiting to die, surrounded by thousands of uneaten marshmallows. Mm. Sometimes in life, you got to eat the marshmallow.
That's a great takeaway. If
all you do in life is delay gratification, you know what you get a lot of? Delay. You know what you get very little of? Gratification.
There you go. Wow. Wow. I mean, again, it's simple to understand. The challenge comes into putting it into action. When you're working with clients, these high-achieving clients, probably who want to retire early, they're in an earning phase, want to accumulate.
Oh, by the way, one of the dumbest ideas of history is they want to retire early. Oh, my God. They're usually hideously awful at retiring.
Well, right. Usually these are people that are so driven. They're constantly active and, you know. Oh, okay.
I have so many funny stories. One of the guys, he, quote, retired, right? And he was alphabetizing the cans in the kitchen. And his wife said, get out.
Yeah.
Get out. Another guy said he walked down the stairs, right? His wife's at the bottom of the stairs. Says, time to go to the office. I said, well, I don't have an office. I'm retired. She says, oh, you have an office now. Here's the keys to your nice new office, and here's your nice new secretary's name. And now you're going to go to your nice new office and meet, by the way, your nice new office, which is not in this house. And you're going to meet your nice new secretary, who is not me, and be gone. And he said, well, what am I going to do? You know what she said? I don't care what you do. Just don't do it in this house. Get out of here. And then she said, I'll see you at 5. And then she goes, no, 6. Let's go with 6. Well, that's the way it is. You can't be this hyperachiever for year after year after year. Just turn it off and play bad golf with old men at the country club and eat chicken sandwiches.
Yeah. So it really is about that fulfillment part, you know, which it ties right in with the you know, the gratitude along the way. Can't delay all of it. And in order to truly be fulfilled, you need to find your purpose and make sure you're doing work that connects with who you are inside.
And that doesn't stop when you, I'm 75 almost. That doesn't stop when you get old.
Well, and here we get into the realm of the next phase of your legacy, Marshall. The Marshall Bot. What is that all about?
Oh, I'm very excited. As you know, I try to give away as much as I can. So all my material, you can go online, copy, share, download, duplicate, using church, charity, nonprofit. Use it any way you want. Send me an email, marshall@marshallgoldsmith.com. I always send everybody anything they ask for. So I just try to help people have a little better life. Well, one thing that's coming up is MarshallBot, which I love. I am the only human I know who's got his developing his own AI computer bot. I'm training it in everything I know, and it's going to be available for free. Ultimately, the goal is to have it available text version, audio version and finally video version. And it's going to be trained to answer any question you would ask me as best I can. And right now it can answer about 75% of all the questions asked better than I can.
That's impressive.
As judged by me. Yeah. It's amazing. It's amazing.
Well, and this kind of resonates with me because one of the things when I talk to people about my coaching is I don't profess to be an expert. You know, I could never out-engineer Alan Mulally or out-Pfizer Albert Bourla, but I can ask questions, and it's knowing what questions to ask that helps these leaders dig within themselves to find the answer. How does that translate with Marshall Bott?
Well, Marshall Bott is really a key concept I teach is feed forward. So I teach all my clients to ask for advice, to listen and say thank you, but don't judge. Buddha said, only do what I teach if it works for you. If it doesn't work for you, it's okay, just don't do it. Well, Marshall Bott is really not a coaching bot. It's a bot that's designed to share knowledge and information from all kinds of sources. So the idea of Marshall Bott is you ask for a suggestion, you'll get an answer. And then the idea is think about the answer, and if it's useful for you, use it, and if it's not, don't. So it's a really intriguing process, and it can answer very deep questions. It can answer very deep questions in a very, very profound way. So it's amazing what it can do, and also quickly. If you ask it a lot of questions, it can provide an answer in 10 seconds. I might be able to provide that answer if I had 3 hours.
Well, maybe I'll have to invite the Marshall Bot back to the podcast and we'll do a quick show.
My wife brought this up. She said after a certain point, especially when the video version, somebody's going to ask Marshall Bot, Marshall Bot, I would like to talk to the real Marshall. And Marshall Bot will say, why? Why? I know more than that guy.
Oh, that's funny. Well, and I think you've landed upon one of the elements I think that is so essential in leadership, and Alan stressed it a lot at Ford, was about this notion of having fun, but never at someone else's expense. And that idea of self-effacing humor and the ability to be able to laugh at yourself and your mistakes along the way, that's critical.
I think it's important. I did a little survey, and I asked people, what percent of all interpersonal communication time is spent on A, somebody talking about how smart, special, and wonderful they are, listening to somebody do that, plus B, somebody talking about how stupid or bad and up somebody else is or listening to that. And the average answer in the whole world is about 65%. You know, one thing Alan is brilliant about is don't do that. Don't waste time on either A, talking about how smart you are, or B, talking about how dumb everybody else is. One of the things I have in one of my books, Triggers, I really like is a simple phrase to write down before you say anything or do anything. Am I willing at this time to make the investment required to make a positive difference on this topic? Am I willing at this time to make the investment required to make a positive difference on this topic? If that answer is yes, do it. If the answer is no, shut up.
Yeah.
Put your time and energy where you will make a positive difference. Peter Drucker taught me, we're here on earth to make a positive difference, not to prove how smart we are, not to prove how wrong we are.
Yeah, that is so critical. I wish more people did that. And, you know, it's interesting because it goes back to something I remember as a young child. And positivity is associated with kindness. And I always remember Mr. Rogers saying, what would be the kindest choice? You know, we all have choices. And if you can't make a kind choice, or like my parents taught me, you know, if you can't say something nice, don't say anything at all. It's that simple.
Well, and I think some people might say, well, that's soft and fluffy. Well, I don't think the stock price of Ford went up from $1.01 to $18.40 because Alan was soft and fluffy. It went up because he established a very positive, helpful culture and people got stuff done.
Yeah. And that was the amazing part. Alan and I left about the same time and we've watched what's happened afterwards. And the process is still in place, but I don't think the culture is quite the same as when Alan left it. And it's not that there was a cult of personality, but he was there to really drive a lot of it. And my experience is when Alan was in charge, you didn't want to disappoint him. It was like your dad or your uncle or your grandfather, you know, you wanted to please him. And it made you happy to see him happy. Right. And I think that was the difference.
Yeah, he's an amazing person. And another great leader I met, I put in his classes, was Francis Hesselbein.
Oh, yeah.
He died recently at 107. And Peter Drucker said the greatest leader ever met. And she also, I knew her for 40-something years. I never saw her be negative or angry at once, ever.
Yeah.
By the way, same with Alan. I've known Alan for, I knew him when he was at Boeing. So I've known him for 30 years. And how many times have I ever seen him get angry, lose control? Zero. You know, he doesn't do that. He's a very disciplined person. Frances is a very disciplined person. And she was always very thoughtful before she would speak. You know, it's like she didn't think about herself. She always thinking about the other person, which is amazing.
Yeah. Well, it's a true talent. So, Marshall, any last words of wisdom from the non-Marshall bot, or the Marshall non-bot, I should say, about what it takes to earn a life?
I always like to finish with my favorite advice for everyone, which is take a deep breath. Imagine you're 95 years old and you're just getting ready to die. Right before you take the last breath, you're given a beautiful gift, the ability to go back in time and talk to the person who's listening to me right now. The ability to help that person be a better leader, or even more important, have a better life. What advice would the wise old person who knows what really mattered in life, what did not matter, what was important and what wasn't, what advice would that wise old person have for the you that's listening to me right now? Well, whatever you're thinking now, do that. In terms of performance appraisal, that's the only one that's going to matter. That old person says you did the right thing, you did. That old person says you made a mistake, you did. You don't have to impress anybody else. Some friends of mine interviewed old folks who were dying and got to ask a question. What advice would you have? On a personal side, three themes. Theme number one, three words. We've talked about this. Be happy now. Not next week, not next month, not the I'll be happy when. Life is short. Be happy now. Don't get so wrapped up looking at what you don't have, you can't see what you do have. Number two is friends and family. Never get so busy climbing the corporate ladder we forget the people we love. Big mistake. And number three, if you have a dream, go for it. Go for it when you're 40. You probably won't when you're 80. Business advice isn't much different. Number one, Alan, Francis, great role models. Life is short. Have fun. Number two, do whatever you can do to help people. And the main reason to help people has nothing to do with money or status or getting ahead. The main reason to help people is much deeper. The 95-year-old you is going to be proud of you because you did, disappointed if you don't. And a final advice, go for it. The world's changing. Do what you think is right. May not win. At least you tried. Old people, we seldom regret the risks we take and fail. We regret the risks we fail to take. And finally, thank you so much for inviting me. And as I've grown older, my mission in life is pretty simple. Just try to help people have a little better life. And maybe if a few people listening to us on this podcast have a little better life based on anything that we've said, it's a good use of my time.
Wow. Generous and wise, as always. Thank you so much, Marshall Goldsmith.
Thank you for inviting me.
Again, simple but profound advice. Enjoy yourself, be considerate to other people in your life, and go for it. It's worth sitting with that last one and remembering how Marshall put it. We seldom regret the risk we take and fail. We regret the risk we fail to take. The hard part is putting all of this into practice. If you'd like some help putting behavioral changes into place yourself, please drop me a note at coaching@scottmonty.com or use the contact page on my website. I'd love to help you develop and determine your aspirations and figure out how to take steps to align your actions to your achievements. Until we're together again, remember, when you inspire others to learn more, dream more, do more, and become more, that's an earned life. And it's timeless leadership. I'm Scott Monty. There's so much to learn.